This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Wednesday, December 18th. On this historic day, we have a very special guest on the podcast, both to offer thoughts on what's happening today and also with some big think on underlying changes that are contributing to this. And I think we'll hear ideas about how to get more Republicans to care as the trial of Donald Trump looms in the Senate, and perhaps a critique that Democrats have bungled this so far in one or two important ways. My guest is Elizabeth Drew, for 20 years the New Yorker's Washington correspondent, later at the New York Review of Books and the New Republic. She's the author of books including Washington Journal Reporting Watergate and Richard Nixon's Downfall, and Showdown, the struggle between the Gingrich Congress and the Clinton White House. And she has had two op-eds about the impeachment process in the New York Times this fall, including one last week called "The Impeachment Process is Barely Functioning," and one from September on how to win Republican support. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for joining us on this historic day.
Hello, Brian. I have to do something. I'd rather do it with you.
I'm so glad. So in September, you wrote a New York Times op-ed called "How to Win Republican Support for Impeachment." And I want to read some of your words for our listeners.
Let me just inject. I love the op-ed editor. We get on very well. I would not have put that title on there.
Oh, what would you have called it?
I can't even remember the piece that well, but what you read, I'll remember it.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm going to read some of your words for our listeners and then ask you to talk about them. This was published on September 30th, so it was before any of the witness testimony on Ukraine and before the House Democrats settled on the two narrow articles of impeachment that they have. You wrote, quote, "Going too quickly could shut off the oxygen that might fuel Republican acceptance that it's time to break with Mr. Trump, perhaps enough of them to end his presidency." And you wrote, "To limit the impeachment process to the most blatant presidential misdeed yet discovered, would leave in the dust, unresolved for history, setting dangerous precedents, the possibility of holding accountable a president who routinely enriches himself at the expense of the taxpayers, and flouts the Constitution's Emoluments Clause, lies so persistently that we're far from the democratic concept of transparent government, usurps the role of Congress by unilaterally holding up funds or using them for other purposes than it has approved, bullies private businesses by threatening a tax increase or a significant raise in postal rates, as Mr. Trump did to Amazon, whose owner also owns the Washington Post, tells intelligence alumni who openly criticize him that he'll suspend their security clearance, and fights the law that allows Congress to obtain his tax returns," unquote. And Elizabeth, I really like your bill of particulars for the sweep of abuse that it documents in a way that I think articulates the breadth of people's concerns about Trump's unfitness and really gets at the big picture. But I know a lot has happened in the 2.5 months since you put that out. I'm curious how much you think this process is playing out in the ways that you feared.
It is. I don't like it. I understand the problems, the constrictions on the process because of we're heading into an election year. And I understand that. And I understand that, you know, Pelosi and other leaders, she's really been in charge of this. And, you know, I admire her a whole lot, but I just don't agree with the way she's gone about this one. I think that I would not put all of those in articles of impeachment now, but I would certainly put more than the one. I mean, it's all about Ukraine. The obstruction of Congress is related to Ukraine. I would not have limited it to one issue. I'd have put in two more, at least. One would be, so you're finding out now, if I were ruling the land, this is what I would do.
If Elizabeth were queen.
That's right. Anyway, I would certainly have an article about emoluments or, you know, getting rich off of the government. And I would have one that would somewhat mirror Article 2 against Nixon, which was it was under the rubric of abuse of power. And it listed a number of things, of which the break-in of the Watergate was just one of several things. It really wasn't the focus of the articles of impeachment then. It may have, you set off the process, but it isn't what it was about.
A list of various abuses of power by Nixon?
Yes, it had the Watergate break-in. It also had what Nixon thought was more worrisome, and I think he was right on that, is they broke these goons, the plumbers that the White House paid for, broke into the Daniel Ellsberg, as you know, leaked the Pentagon Papers, and that really infuriated Nixon, and all the more infuriated Henry Kissinger. And so they really wanted to bring down Ellsberg. And one of the things these idiots did...
The guy who was a Pentagon employee who leaked the Pentagon Papers.
That's exactly right. And they raided Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. Now, just think about that for a minute. I mean, it's much worse than breaking into party headquarters if you have to, you know, have relative morality here. It's terrible. It's terrifying. Now, they were so bad. They mucked up everything they tried to do, which is what saved the Republic. They certainly mucked up the break-in of the Watergate. And in the case of Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, one, the file wasn't there, and they thought it was, but it wasn't. And number two is they had pictures taken of themselves standing in front of the doctor's office. They were using CIA equipment. So these pictures were around showing that they were, you know, raiding that office. And that's what Nixon worried about after the break-in when he met with Bob Haldeman, who was his chief of staff. They talked about paying, you know, whether they needed to pay off the burglars or plumbers, whatever you want to call them. And they referred to, well, it was that other stuff that they did that's so worrisome, that they were worried that that would get out. This was the raid in Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, which, when it came out, ended the legal case against Ellsberg. So, anyway, the Article 2 in 1974 had that. It had using the IRS against, you know, perceived enemies. It had wiretapping. So I would have a sort of catch-all Article 2. And then I would have one about the money separately and Ukraine. So that it isn't just one thing. I also thought strategically it's harder then for the Republicans to defend three things, or if, you know, if Article 2 is a collection of things, defending, you know, against a number of things as opposed to defending against one, which is Ukraine. And the thought was Ukraine is something the public can understand and we can, you know, we can really get that across. Well, you know, there's a public understanding that something's wrong, you know, with the Trump presidency and in his polls. He's never gotten to 50%, and there are majorities saying he should be both impeached and removed. Mm-hmm. But you also get, well, why remove somebody from office? You're going to get this when the Senate takes it up in the trial in January. Why remove somebody from office because of a phone call? That's what they're going to
And in that context, it was interesting to me as I was thinking about your op-ed today and the kind of sweep of abuses that we've been talking about with Trump as compared to Nixon, as you were describing. There in the floor debate this morning was a Republican invoking the Democrats' longstanding concerns about Trump's fitness for office and using it against them. It's Republican Debbie Lesko of Arizona. Listen.
The Democrats are really undermining their own argument here, because 17 out of the 24 Democrat members on the Judiciary Committee voted here on this floor to move forward articles of impeachment on July 17th of this year, before the President Trump's call even took place. And 5 out of the 9 Rules Committee members that are Democrats did the same thing.
And Elizabeth, that's interesting to me in the context of the Democrats' narrow focus on the Ukraine scandal, as if it was a criminal trial just about that. They could be standing up and reading something like your bill of particulars about gross misconduct, or it all adds up to gross misconduct, and they could say, yes, of course we've been on the brink of this for a long time with the destructive things that he's done that go way beyond policy differences, and Ukraine was just the last straw. But I haven't been hearing that.
No, and that vote that she's referring to was not a very popular idea. It was Al Green, I believe, of Texas. And he had been pushing and pushing against the leadership and against, I think, probably, you know, the real feelings of most Democrats, that it wasn't time yet to do that. He was jumping the gun. So I wouldn't equate that with what's going on now. But on my other point is, and I think it's happening, is that if you rely on this one issue, Ukraine, all you have to do is muddy that up a bit, and then people get confused about it. You get reactions. I've seen some focus groups where people say, "Well, why are we giving money to Ukraine anyway?" Things like that, and so. And they don't think, well, maybe it's not so terrible to hold up the money to this corrupt, not allegedly. Ukraine was very corrupt. It's cleaning up now, but it's got a way to go. So I thought it was not, you know, strategically it wasn't a great idea. Now, there was some pushing. I referred to this in my recent piece in the Times. I did several before. I'm going to pat myself on the back here, but I did one at the end of last year, mm-hmm. or just before New Year's, and I said there's going to be an impeachment next year. And I meant a real one and a serious one. I just knew it was going to come to that. And this was a shocking thing to say at the time. I just felt it coming. But I certainly would have broadened the scope of what's for. So when the committee, the Judiciary Committee, was meeting last weekend to decide what would be in the bill of articles of impeachment, some wanted to put in the Stormy Daniels. That was a crime, to pay her off, mm-hmm. So that he could get elected. In fact, he's considered individual number one in a criminal case in New York. And his former, Trump's former personal lawyer, Mr. Cohen, is sitting in jail.
That's right.
Because of that.
Yes.
Some wanted to add the obstruction subjects that Mr. Mueller put in his report, and he virtually asked Congress, he said, you know, we're not allowed to indict a president, so he asked Congress to hold him accountable in the articles of impeachment. The leadership didn't want to do that because they didn't want to raise the whole Russia thing now. They wanted to do it really quickly and, you know, be done with it before by Christmas. So there were a lot of things that people wanted to raise. They certainly wanted to raise the emoluments and making money off of the presidency. Yeah. So there were the liberals on the Judiciary Committee were really not terribly happy about the ending up with just these two articles.
You know, as it goes to the Senate for the trial of Donald Trump, starting
right.
after New Year's, there was a very interesting finding in an ABC News poll that came out yesterday. Like all the other polls, it found basically a 50-50 split on impeachment as of now. But it found that big majorities across party lines want the key witnesses who Trump is blocking to testify in the Senate trial. 71% of all people polled, including 64% of Republicans. That number is very big and very striking. And I'm curious if you think that might put enough pressure on some swing state Republicans, because they'd only need about four of them, to vote for calling them.
I think you're right. That's something to be watched for whenever it comes up after it moves to the Senate, because that's a very tough vote for some of these senators, Collins and Murkowski. Collins is up though, and she's believed to be in a rather tough situation. And Cory Gardner of Colorado, and one of them from Arizona, one from Iowa. What are they going to do? The president wanted a big show of a lot of witnesses, but
well, so he says.
Mitch McConnell didn't, and he talked him out of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you say shouldn't some witnesses, if you're polling and you say should some witnesses that have been kept from appearing on this subject appear in the Senate, people are going to say yes. It seems like a totally logical proposition.
You know, an article in the Times today notes that Republicans are running ads around the country that seek to capitalize on the backlash to impeachment But Democrats are not running many ads that try to capitalize on it as something good that they've done for the country. Why do you think that difference would be?
I think they know the power of Trump's voice. And just it's the same thing as the same day that the House Judiciary Committee adopted the articles of impeachment. Pelosi made sure that the House also approved the new NAFTA bill. So to show that, you know, the Democrats aren't sitting there just wanting to impeach Trump. They believe that this isn't the voting issue in November. The people are much more interested in things that affect them, and they don't quite see this as affecting them all that much. So that's why she went on to the trade thing. Also, they say, see, we can work with the president. We can, you know, we can compromise with him if he'll compromise with us. They want to stress that they talk a lot about having passed over 100 bills, most of them sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk because he won't bring them up. And that's what they want to be known for, not for impeaching Trump, but for passing all this legislation that people do care about, gun control and certain voting rights and something about health care. They're going to at least do something about lowering drug costs.
And yet they've gone to all this effort to impeach Donald Trump.
Well, they felt they could not. It was there. They couldn't leave it. Here he was the day after the Mueller testified, and it wasn't considered a smashing success. I didn't think it was as bad as a lot of other people did, and I think he did influence some people. But in any event, the day after the Mueller report Mueller brings it to the Congress, and didn't seem to have swayed a lot of people. Trump said, oh, so I can get away with this. Now, Russia was at the heart of so much of what Mueller was talking about. So that's when he, you know, had his call with the prime minister, with the president of Ukraine, and held him up on arms. Said, you know, we want you to do us a favor, though. That's the most important use of the word, though, probably in all of human history. And so...
Right, because though links it to what Zelensky was asking him for,
exactly.
Which was missiles to defend against Russia.
That's right. So it was really felt that, first of all, Pelosi was under a lot of pressure. The majority of the Democratic caucus wanted to impeach Trump on the various subjects that you and I have talked about. And let's say Ukraine hadn't happened at that point. And then all of a sudden you heard about the whistleblower, and that changed everything. And they felt they could not, because here was the president inviting another country to participate in the 2020 election. And you just couldn't sit and let that happen.
Finally, go ahead. You want to finish that thought?
Well, that also affects the timing, you see, because they want to get it done as soon as they can, and try to. I don't know if it's going to have this effect, because we have a very peculiar, an attorney general with a very peculiar idea of his role. But the whole point was to try to head off his being able to invite other countries to help in the next election. I still think he'll try. He'll just be more subtle about it.
Last question. You argue in your new Time's Up-ed that unless our system undergoes radical change,
uh-huh.
We could be on the brink of having no check on the president,
uh-huh.
No matter how radically he defies the Constitution. Do you have some kind of radical change to the system in mind?
Well, yes. You'd get back to a more bipartisan system, but that's huge. You'd have to change the districting. You'd have to change attitudes. That's what I meant. In context of the rest of the piece, I think it's clear that's what I meant, that you'd have to have a bipartisan system that seems very, very far away right now.
Elizabeth Drew, thank you so much. Very illuminating. I really appreciate it.
Well, I like talking to you always, Brian, so nice to talk to you.
And ditto, same thing. Enjoy that sunny day.
Okay.
Earlier in this series, we took phone calls from listeners who proposed articles of impeachment. Now we're inviting calls from listeners who do not think Trump should be removed from office. We'll give you the phone number in a minute. But here's an unusual one, a caller who opposes this impeachment because the charges are too light.
My name's Travis. I'm calling from Colorado. I actually don't think that Trump should be impeached under these articles. I think he's done a lot worse. And I think if you remove him for these things, it shows that everything else he did is okay up to this line. I would like to see him reelected, and then I would also like to see the Democrats take over the Senate and keep the House and hold him responsible for everything that a normal person would be held responsible for.
Thanks, Travis in Colorado. If you are anyone who does not want to see Trump removed from office after being impeached by the House for any reason, call in and tell us why. Leave your voicemail at 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255 or 844-745-TALK, and maybe we'll use yours on the podcast. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.